We're here to talk local issues because there's a community board meeting this Wednesday, tomorrow actually. Is that just what we're going to talk about, John? Go straight into that?
Can do if you like. First, there's also a general election on, but
yeah, it's
you're trying to ignore that.
Yeah, stupid election. I just hate having to, like, people, someone was asking me, am I going to interview some politicians? I'm like, no, I don't want to. Well, you can't get anything out of them except their talking points, so I don't know what the point is. And I actually think most journalists should take this approach. If the people won't talk to them properly and just try and use the interview as a vehicle to get their talking points across, they just refuse to talk to them. So I'll go and find someone else who can actually have a conversation with and give us some insight.
Okay, so you're starting a union of journalists refusing to talk to politicians.
Yeah, well, I'm not a journalist, so. But it's I think when you're the journalist who talks to the Prime Minister, like, your proximity to power is a little bit addictive, so I don't think that's ever going to happen. But they really should. They should just say, nah, I'm going to find someone who can actually give us some insight here.
That surprises me what they are reporting and what they're not, because I thought James Shaw gave a really good adjournment speech, and yet I've seen virtually no coverage of it.
John, I would say if you liked something, as a rule, it's probably not going to be covered in the national media.
It was both amusing and it had lots of fairly controversial points in it as well.
Yeah, well, but it's probably threatening the establishment and the...
Well, that's true.
I mean, I have this belief that the national media, the mainstream media, the media that's powerful, I think that's a better way of looking at it, is wedded to the establishment. I know it appears that they're trying to hold politicians to account, but it's all within fairly narrow borders.
Okay, so is the community board the establishment?
No, we're too small. We're not very... Neither them nor me are powerful enough for stuff like that to really be an issue.
Yeah, they're just an advisory group that the council usually ignores the advice from.
For starters, and I'm basically an advisory group as well. That's the amount of power I have. But I do have this... Because this thing I was just saying, I was thinking about this, like, when there's a coup in a country, the army takes their tanks to Parliament, and they take over Parliament, and the next place they go to is the TV stations and take over there. Mm-hmm. And I think if the media was not part of the establishment... they've got the power to change the government if they really want to. And so either if the media is not part of the establishment, they're going to change the government or the government's going to change them, either or. And it's never going to last for very long that the media has a really different outlook on life from the government.
Yeah, well, you think who appoints the media and it's the establishment. So.
Yeah, and the establishment kind of appoints the government. That's what people don't really... You think the Prime Minister is the person most in charge, but unless he walks a tightrope...
That's why Labour and National have got virtually the same policy.
Yeah.
Because one of the interesting things that James Shaw pointed out was that National's introducing more new taxes than Labour, and the Greens have got a bigger tax rebate than National. Makes it really odd election.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, it's...
Anyway, we'll talk about local things and community board, I suppose.
Because this
is a local, so one of the first people they're listening to is a group that is coming to talk to them about wind farms offshore. So this is Blue Float Energy, and apparently they've done a presentation over at Carapiro, which is on their website. It looks as though Raglan's going to get the same tomorrow. So they're going to be talking about the number of wind turbines, which apparently is 54 they're planning at the moment, and 810 megawatts, which is probably about twice the output of Huntly, isn't it, I think?
Huntly Power Station?
Yeah, I think that's about 400 and something, whereas this is,
I thought it was
810.
I thought Huntly was higher, but I don't remember. But anyway, that's a lot. It is a lot.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, no. Well,
I've not checked my figures.
I'm more likely to be wrong than you, John. Let's face it. So, but that's big. That is big. So I suspect that those turbines are pretty huge. They're going to be 20 k's offshore, so we won't be seeing them.
Yeah. Well, there's 54 of them, which is roughly twice the number we've got up at Tiuku.
Yeah.
Or above Tiuku. So, yeah, it's going to be a large thing. I thought maybe it had been forgotten, so I'm surprised to see it back on the agenda again.
They're coming to tell us because, this is good PR, I guess, isn't it?
I think
public relations in the old-fashioned sense, maybe.
Because one of the other bits of news they've got on their website is about the agreement they've just reached with New Zealand Steel and the proposal to have an electric arc furnace up there, and the idea of what they're calling green steel. So rather than steel being made with coal, which it usually is,
the idea is
you can use an electric arc furnace and make it that way.
Yeah, it's steel with a green tinge to it. That's the way I'd put it. But
it's not so carbon emitting as if you just keep pouring coal in and use the Bessemer converter, which is what we've done ever since that was invented back in the 19th century.
Yeah, I'm sure the reality is that that's just going to be more power for the country as a whole. And just because Glenbrook won't be using power from Huntly Power Station, somebody else will be. So it's not really going to make that bit of difference, but it's a nice bit of greenwashing for the steel company. But the steel, what are we going to do? We need to produce steel so we can build more buildings to house all the people who are homeless.
Well, you can use timber these days because there's quite a lot of fairly high-rise timber constructions being put together.
Do you know what they put in the timber, John?
Steel.
Pretty much copper, chrome, and arsenic. That's the CCA treatment in timber. Or they use what's called a light organic solvent. And the use of the word organic is misleading because when you handle it, it's advised to wear gloves because of the chemicals in it. So trees themselves are environmentally friendly, although a monoculture of pines is not particularly particularly fabulous. You'd have to sit down and nut it out to actually work out which was the least environmentally friendly, I feel.
I think trees have got quite a lot going for them because even whilst they're growing, they're storing carbon. And when they're actually in a building, they're storing carbon.
Handy. So. But the thing with the metal is the steel is you can recycle it, whereas if you pull apart a building with timber in it, it's basically shattered and ruined. These days, because everything's glued together,
it's a renewable resource, so you can grow more of it.
We don't think it's why I say you don't need to get more steel because just once we start recycling properly, steel construction. I'm not trying to defend it at all. I'm just saying it's more complex.
And recycling steel is a bit like recycling glass that you put an awful lot of energy in just to recycle it.
Yeah.
To get anything up to, what's the melting point of steel, about 1,000 degrees?
Very, very hot, John. Very hot. it's not fabulous either way, but there you go.
Yeah, well, there's too many of us to live in caves these days. So.
Yeah, well, we'd have to dig the caves out, and that'd probably have a cost to it as well. Anyway, Float Energy are coming to talk about wind farms at the community board meeting for 15 minutes probably.
And Sound Splash is also on the agenda, only as a report, so I don't think they're actually going to come and talk to the community board. They are talking to the council and having a meeting later this month to try and sort out their resource consent, because the council still got concerns about some of the things which are in there, so they're saying that they're looking at the management plans and they've got a final sign-off date set for the 1st of November, which considering I think they've sold virtually all the tickets now, always seems an odd way of doing it.
Well, this is the new world of event management where you can sell the tickets before the event, you know exactly how much money you've got, and then the whole thing is much more secure. Because long-time residents will remember what happened. Was it 2009? Sound Splash had a very bad year because they were selling at the gate, I think, and it was terrible weather, and it killed it for quite a while until some backers came on board. So it's understandable that they run events that way, but I get that it's weird that you've sold all the tickets and then you're working on the consent. Yep. But I guess that's just the way it goes.
And for next year, they're asking that they're going to produce plans on transport, well-being, and staff and volunteer management. This year, they're asking for agreements from the Surf Club and from St. John about the emergency services that might be provided.
So council wants some paperwork, basically.
Well, it seems as though they're looking to see that the problems that we've had in previous years aren't repeated, but they seem to keep getting repeated, so I'm not sure how effective that sort of monitoring and attempt to do something about it is.
Yeah, the gist of what I've heard is that the site itself, that like what was happening at the site itself was good. There are questions, because if you have an emergency, like an ambulance required, that is an issue, but I'm not quite sure how that's playing out. I know there were problems with where people get on the buses to go to you know, from the airfield to the event, there were definitely issues there. They'd solved one issue from the previous year. It seemed to create a new issue the next year. I'm not sure of the details, but I know that they are working on that as well.
People were still waiting a long time on a hot day for a bus.
Yeah, that's right. It didn't quite work out as you would have hoped. It feels like it's going to this year, but I'm just picking up things from the grapevine, so none of that's kind of like news.
And it is they're running a bus from Auckland this time, which seems to be a sensible way of doing it.
Yeah, they can park in Auckland, leave the cars in Auckland, and come on down. Yeah, it actually is quite a good idea, isn't it? Maybe we should make everyone who comes to Raglan Park out of town.
Park in Auckland.
Yeah, or Hamilton. It's fine. I don't care. And there'll be more parks for me when I come downtown.
You'll be able to cycle without being knocked over by all the cars trying to find parking space and not looking where you are.
That's why I go on the footpath, John. There's no pedestrians. Seriously, hardly any. When I bike to work, might pass one or two people walking.
Okay.
Yeah, the people don't walk, even in the small town. The only ones who walk are the kids when they leave school.
Yeah, I must admit, I don't meet many people when I'm walking.
Yeah, you're one of the ones who walk, so you know, yeah.
I was amazed when I saw 8 people on the Kaitoke walkway on Sunday.
Well, was that at one of their work days?
Saturday's the work day.
That was Saturday, the work day. Okay, all right.
And they are achieving quite a lot on there, but there's still quite a lot of climbing asparagus still to go.
Climbing asparagus, what a nightmare. All right, so back to the community board meeting yesterday. Sound Splash is mentioned. I don't know if they'll actually discuss much there.
One of the interesting things I thought in the comment was that they want landowner approval from the relevant iwi hapu group for use of the Raglan airfield.
Yeah.
And they have said in the past that they can't close the airfield, and yet they seem to manage to do it for Sound Splash. So.
No, they can. They could put a temporary NOTAM alert out. It's called a NOTAM alert. What does NOTAM mean? I can't remember, but that's the thing that everyone who flies a plane knows what that is, and they know that they're not supposed to go and land at the airport that day when that alert is out. Uh-huh. The problem is that not every pilot is religiously checking for NOTAM alerts, I understand. But anyway,
they spot lots of people and cars and such like on an airfield.
Yeah, I think that'd be hard to miss. There hasn't been a problem, and I'm not expecting there to be a problem. It sounds like I'm trying to dramatise it.
And I also noticed they're talking about looking at the numbers attending for future events, but not for this coming one.
Who's looking at it? They want to make it bigger or smaller?
This is part of the council. So they say that they're going to review the consent attendee restrictions.
So hold on a sec. Just one thing about this. I thought they'd got a 5-year consent recently. Is it a flexi consent where the council can change things if it feels like?
Well, we've still not seen this consent, so I'm guessing it's a consent that says, yes, in principle you can do it, but in practice you need to submit all these plans for approval.
Yeah, I imagine the paperwork's quite overwhelming, being familiar with council as we are.
So I think, yes, they can hold it, but the council can keep changing the restrictions until it becomes non-viable, if they feel like it.
Yeah, that's kind of what happens, isn't it? With sometimes with council, they'll do it that way.
But this is one of the reasons. It seems to me why it'd be good if everyone knew what the consent conditions were, and you could see whether they were being kept to or not, and how strict they were. Or
is it not a public consent, like a resource consent?
Well, it's never been published. Probably if you put in an official information request, you could get it from the council.
Aren't there levels of consents? I guess it's not a publicly notified one, is it?
It's not been publicly notified that I'm aware of, which again seems rather odd.
That's to explain to the listeners, there's levels of consent that you can get. And some there's almost like just do what you want. The consent is if you're doing a certain thing, it's within the normal bounds, you can do that. Then there's the council staff have discretion whether they're allowed or not, and then you have to go and notify people, and sometimes you have to notify all the public. So I don't know what level it's at, and John doesn't either.
No, that's why I say it'd be good if it was published. But if somebody wants to put in an official information request and let us all know what's in it, that might be quite good.
One thing I want to say, though, I don't mean to be sounding like we're giving Sound Splash a hard time. I always make this point that when the rally came to town, lots of middle-aged people liked the rally, and there was lots of support for the rally in town, even though there was also lots of people didn't like the idea. And when the event happened, John's raised his hand. When the event happened, I kind of felt like we were just being used as a pretty backdrop for the TV pictures. But that's just my opinion. But what I'm saying is that there were people who have a voice who were supportive of the rally, whereas the people who are supportive of the music festival are young people, teenagers and people in their early 20s, and they don't have the same kind of voice. So I just like to keep reminding people of that, because there are people in our community, members of our community, who like it and want it to keep happening and enjoy it. So, yeah. Anyway,
should we move? Same applies to most things in town, probably. You can find people who oppose and people who support.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of who's got the loudest voice.
Or who gets heard, even. Yeah.
Yeah. So, should we move on to civil defence? Actually, there's not much to say about that, is there? Civil
defence. There's supposed to be a meeting later this month, so maybe Lisa or Dennis will have more to say about that when it gets nearer the end of this month.
Yeah, so they have been working on a basic plan, civil defence plan, and now they've got that sorted, they are ready to go to the community and find people who want to be involved in certain aspects of the plan. So that's
it does say interested parties, so I think if you feel that you're an interested party, you need to let Lisa or Dennis know that you are.
Yeah, and they're definitely looking for people who want to be involved, and I know there are people who want to be involved in civil defence issues as well. So I think it should sort of happen. What's this about the bus survey, John?
I think when you interviewed Dennis last time, he was saying he was going to follow up on it, and this is the follow-up on it, that they're just saying, oh, it's still being worked on by regional council. So whatever that means, I don't know whether it's at the top of their in-tray or the bottom of their in-tray. But
maybe we'll get more details at the community board meeting.
Maybe we won't.
That's why I said maybe. But hopefully we'll get some details. Good. Because I know people want to see it up and running for summer, or summertime.
Question which is the obvious which summer.
Yeah, well, but it's the obvious time to start, all right? You don't want to start something like that in the start of winter in this town.
Well, it was first proposed 3 years ago, and here we are still talking about the regional council looking at the procurement of it.
But it does seem like it's going to happen to you, doesn't it? It feels like it's going to happen to me.
Well, it feels like they're dragging their feet and hoping that a national government might get elected and cut all this rubbish about public transport and get everyone back in their cars where National thinks they want to be.
I don't think the council staff. I don't think their agenda is that precisely.
I'm not accusing district council. I'm thinking more at regional level.
Regional. Well, same. I don't really think that's what the staff want.
And they all have the problem of being understaffed, which is part of the
ongoing
problem across all the councils.
They might not have that attitude, but they might be going slow nonetheless, and it might look like that. Yeah.
And also in their priorities, Raglan's pretty low because there's much more growth in the north of the district than there is. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure if you're a bureaucrat in the Waikato region, the growth up there is probably getting your attention quite drastically. How much did Pokono increase by, like 500 to 5,000 people or something in the
something
last few
like
years?
That, yeah.
Yeah. That's got to be like get your attention if you're a planner or involved in transport and all that.
Most of those people are going to want to commute into the Auckland area. So how do you provide buses and trains that get them there rather than clogging up the roads?
Tunnel through the Bombays, John. that's the one.
But then they meet the traffic jam somewhere around Drury.
That's the problem. You always meet it. Yeah. And if you can get all the way into the centre of Auckland, like fantastically well, then that just clogs up the centre of Auckland. Let's move on.
We're near a walkway.
We're near a walkway.
Next thing I've got on my list. And,
yeah.
This again is, it said it was due by the end of August to have a report. And we've gone past the end of August and
just
maybe they're going
you
to present it.
Yeah, just because you haven't seen a report doesn't mean there isn't one.
And they're now talking about constructing a footpath and a handrail. So footpath gives the impression that it's not supposed to be part of the cycleway that they've just spent over $1 million on.
I think there's not enough money to completely go in there with a bulldozer and rebuild that whole path. We're talking about the one that goes from the Bow Street jetty round past the bridge to Papahua round to the boat ramp there.
The
fire station, yeah. So they're going to try and expand it the width as much as they can and put a handrail in. So I think there will be a wider walkway and a handrail, but we haven't seen any plans yet. So, yeah.
But it depends what they spend on it, because if they... And it seems to me that they built the footbridge to be too narrow, so that's not all that convenient as part of a cycleway, especially when it's busy. This is going to have the same problem, because by the time you've put a handrail there, it's going to be effectively that much narrower. So,
well, that's right now, if you tried to put a handrail in, you'd make the path incredibly narrow and it wouldn't work. But I think they are finding a way to make the actual area wider, because the wall below it's on a bit of a slope. So I think they can get some extra width out of it. I think after talking to Dennis Amor a few weeks ago, I think that's what they're trying to do.
Okay.
because if you just put a handrail there now, it'd be hopeless.
Because you could build the wall so that it was more vertical rather than the current slope.
Yeah, and the wall is the problem. That's what needs rebuilding anyway.
Yeah, they did get that report, was it last year, saying it might last another 5 years?
Yeah. Council doesn't like things that might last another 5 years. It makes them very uncomfortable. So, we'll find out more about that. On the wharf, what about the wharf, John? What do we got here?
Rebuilding or building has started on this side of the wharf, the west side of the wharf. This is basically just a report saying that they got regional council consent when the report was written. They were waiting for district council assent, but since it was a district council project, I think that was pretty much given. And it seems it has been given, because they have started work and they're bringing in 1,000 tonnes of rock to form a new seawall. So that's going to be the basis for the new walkway there. The idea is to get people off the road that's one-way system round past the silos there,
yeah,
and get people walking on a separate walkway.
So the council consent will just be construction consent. So everybody gets those, so long as you do things according to the building code.
Yep. And they're hoping to get it done before Christmas, which, given that we're in September and it's only just started, seems quite ambitious. I'm interested to see it includes tree pits. So the Puhutukawas, which are there at the moment, are still going to be there, but they're going to have pits around them. Don't know how well that's going to let them grow when they get to a big tree, but it's certainly going to save the ones that are there at the moment.
If it's not done by Christmas, it may not happen till mid-February. I think they recognise that if they don't get it done by Christmas, there's going to be so many people there, they need to just wait for that summer rush to be over.
Yeah, and then they're talking about finishing it off with signboards and sculpture and a pedestrian raised table. I'm not too sure what that is, but we'll see.
The Manu Bay Breakwater Wall.
This is another one that's ongoing, and now they're saying it needs further analysis.
So I know that Dennis Amor, Community Board Chairperson, is extraordinarily frustrated with this. Like me, he's been his whole career in the construction industry, and I've had a little bit of time in it. And you just, things don't normally work like this. They don't normally just drag on infinitely, but...
Well, they do if you don't want to spend lots of money rebuilding a breakwater that you rebuilt in 2015.
Yeah, well, they're saying it doesn't do the job.
It's not surprising it doesn't do the job, because it's out in the open ocean. it wasn't a good place to build a breakwater in the first place if you wanted to deal with anything other than a calm sea. And in a calm sea, it works, but in a rough sea a sea that's at all rough, it doesn't.
So, John, you've told me in the past that the original wall or the ramp was built by fishing community members. When? What decade?
So it was in the 1970s, I think.
1970s. They just went and did it. There was no consent. Well, there's no such thing as a resource consent, because the Resource Management Act hadn't been created then. But, they did it without consent, but somehow it's become established, and now the council...
And the surfers is responsible happy for with it at that time, and the surfers have still got concerns about it, because it's one of the nationally significant left-hand breaks. So any design's got to take into account that left-hand break, which I suppose you could say is world famous. It's what brings lots of people to Raglan.
Yeah, you could definitely say it's world famous.
Whereas boat ramps are all over the place. So,
is it officially designated as a significant natural thing?
Because
when someone does anything there infrastructure wise they have to take that into account.
Well, it's part of the draft regional plan that the region is consulting on at the moment. So that's maybe another thing. If we've got time in the next 20 minutes, we might cover that.
I'm sure we won't get there. We never. But that draft plan, that's a draft plan, and it certainly didn't exist when they've rebuilt the breakwall.
But it's a draft plan which is based on what's already been declared as a nationally significant break, which gives it protection.
So, all right. So, is this a missing piece of information that I've never heard anyone talk about? Is because it's nationally significant. When the new break wall was designed, it had to be made different from the last one. Is that the case?
I don't know enough about it to say whether that's the case or not.
For those who don't know, the last one was like a wall, and the waves would just bounce off it, and you could stand there and watch the waves kind of crossing as they came in and then back again. The current one has a slope. And it has often pushed boulders over the top and left them on the ramp. Quite big boulders, right? The sort of thing that would make a nasty hole in your boat if you drove into them. So obviously that's not good. One of the solution they're currently trying is they've dug out all the boulders from behind the break wall, which obviously is going to have to be something that they do every few years because it'll fill back in again. But at the moment, if you stand up on... Oh, actually, probably if we look at the surf cam, we could see... No, not the surf cam. There's other places where you can look, and you can see that there's definitely a hole behind the wall now where there's no boulders. So, yeah, it's the other surf cam.
Well, this is why it needs further analysis, I suppose, because...
Yeah, there you go. You can see it now, John.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you looking at?
Well, there's the break wall there.
For listeners who want to look at it as well.
Yeah. What am I looking at?
Hearing that there's the break wall
there. They have to pay for it. It's the surf line... Surf line, surf report, and surf cam, and there's one of the points, one of Manu Bay, one of the beach, and there needs to be one at Ruapuki, but no one's put a camera out there.
And if you wanted to Google something, what would you look for? Raglan Manu Bay webcam? Yeah.
Probably there's still photos out there, yeah. Anyway, so what are we saying? I'm just trying to explain what's there. What we don't understand and can't explain is why it's taken so incredibly long to sort out, but there's a lot of acrimony. The fishing club's very upset, got lawyers out in the past. And then we're talking about this was replaced. This became an issue when Clint Baddeley was still councillor. So that's 7 years ago, or probably 8 years ago. Yep. 2015, yeah.
Well, as I say, it seemed to me that the expectations are too high that if you've got a single wall sticking out into a rough sea, then you're going to have problems. And the only way to solve it seems to me, is to build something like New Plymouth Scott with three sides of a... large wall around.
An even bigger wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just so fishing boats can go out. Like, as soon as, the thing is, it would be a fantastic wall. It would stop all the huge waves and the storms. But the fishing boats, as soon as they went around the wall, they'd get capsized anyway. So it's not that beneficial.
Yeah.
And I've seen, well, I was down there once, and I hardly ever go down there, and I saw some very bad, unskilled, thoughtless boat driving, shall we call it, skippering. So there's, from someone who wasn't from around here, clearly.
Maybe we need a ferry to get the small boats over the bar, and so they can sort of get to the bar okay and then get beyond the bar okay, but the bar is a problem.
Do you think we've explained this very well? I still can't explain.
Maybe we ought to move on to something we do understand better.
Yeah, but I can say that Dennis Amor is frustrated with that. In fact, he's publicly said he's frustrated at the speed that's going.
The campaign group that's been trying to ensure we don't get fluoride in our water has managed to get it on the agenda again. So, but it's only on the agenda to the extent that it says that council's not received any direction to put fluoride in the water, which could come from the government or the health department. And council is not a party to the court proceedings raised in the public forum. So council's washing its hands of it and saying it's not us, not our fault.
Yeah, they're like, we haven't been told to do it, so we're not touching it, yeah. Which is fair enough. They're not doing it. The court proceedings are taken by community organisations around the country or an organisation against the government, against the Director General of Health specifically. Uh-huh. I think. Am I right about that?
Yes. Well, yeah. It was a letter from the previous director of health who raised the idea that maybe we were going to get some instruction.
So there is. There certainly seems to be some issues with the fluoride, as far as I can tell, but I haven't looked into it deeply. But this is one of those issues that breaks down on your anti-science and you're a you're running a conspiracy. It's very hard to get, but maybe if it goes to actually a court case, there might be some science brought to light. But who knows?
Yeah, from my non-scientific point of view, it does seem really odd that we've got millions, or probably hundreds of millions, of people around the world who have fluoride, and equally hundreds of millions who haven't. And it should be possible to compare the statistics for all the things that are suspected fluoride creates, whether it's brittle bones or mental problems or any of the other things. So, And yet that's not been done. And presumably the various health ministries around the world have got the resources to do it. So that's why I've got some doubts about it.
It's
It's one of those, we don't know anything about.
Yeah, it's one of those things that the people like high up in the health system have basically, their careers now are staked on this. So it's very hard to get an engaging, a full discussion, a proper discussion going on in that environment. And when Hamilton City Council decided to go away from fluoride a few years ago, they had some people come and present to them. And they decided that they wouldn't do fluoride, and the and it just went berserk in the national media. Hamilton City Council's lost its mind. And I was like, well, what were they shown? Well, the media didn't say, here's what they were shown and here's why they made the decision. They just said, just gave the impression that Hamilton City Council had lost its mind. And there were some PR campaigns from the Ministry of Health spent $40,000 on a PR campaign. Not an information campaign, just a PR campaign, almost propaganda campaign. If you want, if you're of that mind, you would say a proper propaganda campaign. So it was not an intelligent debate. It was just a knee-jerk reaction from the establishment that the wall was crumbling, and it didn't inform us.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying either or, for or against. I'm just saying the debate frustrates the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Because it's not a debate.
It seems to me that there ought to be a scientific proof one way or the other, and we haven't got it, which puzzles me. But anyway, it's, as I was saying earlier, it's something neither of us know a huge amount about, so maybe we move on and talk about something that's a bit simpler, like repainting the rugby club.
So, oh, yep.
Council's spending quite a bit of money on repainting the interior and exterior of a rugby club. They're going to start on the exterior in the spring, and they've done the interior.
So when you say rugby club, are you talking about the building that the club itself put there?
Yeah, down at Cross Street, yes.
So the council's paying to repaint that?
Yes.
That's very nice of them.
Yes.
Because the soccer club's got a shipping container. Yeah.
Maybe they could repaint the shipping container.
Yeah, how
I'll give you some paint. How about that?
The campground gave some paint last time it was painted.
Okay.
Yeah, so big ups to the campground for stepping in. Yeah.
Yeah, talking of the campground, they're having an upgrade as well. The council's spending quite a lot of money there, but the campground does make a profit.
Are the council spending the money, or is it coming out of the fairly substantial campground profits?
I suspect the latter, but I've not seen the books to check where it's coming from.
Okay, all right. No solid answer there.
The council reports it as their spending, but I think it's their spending of the profits that they get from the camping.
But the council doesn't get those profits. They don't go into the council coffers because they're not allowed to. That money has to be spent on there,
yes,
on the land. Yeah.
I think this is a bookkeeping way of doing it, but I could be wrong. So they're sorting out the stormwater, which might help the soccer club.
Do we need a forensic accountant? what are we talking about, stormwater and the soccer club, John?
Because they're sorting out the stormwater at the campground, which is next door to the soccer ground.
That doesn't make any sense. They did that. They did that a few years ago. Except, I was actually a bit frustrated with this, because this is when I was involved with the soccer club, and I got this attitude that we were annoying and just, you know, didn't know what we're talking about, even though I have a background in the construction industry. And yes, we're going to fix that thing. Don't worry about it. Leave us to it. And it was what it was the campground, when it flooded, they pumped water literally into the sandbank beside the soccer field, which we discovered one day when a little eruption of water after many decades, it's just started coming up out of the ground and flowing over the surface into the soccer field. So we knew it was there. And I was promised that that was going to be sorted out. And we discovered 2 years ago that it wasn't. So I was basically fobbed off and lied to by I don't know who. And it might, and I'm just, yeah, I wasn't happy with that. And so then Dennis Amor was the person who actually got them to extend the pipe and send the water further away from the soccer fields. It's still not in a very good place. It's only gone another 20 metres, but it's further from the soccer fields.
Okay, well, it's supposed to be another upgrade.
So, yeah, so what are they doing if all this work? Because they, the bit that where I thought they were going to do something to help the soccer out involved putting, because there'd been a massive flood a few years ago. The whole campground was flooded. And so they put in pipes to, and pumps to send the water back out of the campground toward the town stormwater system. So if they did all that and they spend all that money, why? This is my question: is why is this happening now, John?
Yeah, but the council has set up a website which shows these various projects that they're working on. But the problem is that they're in the a few lines of summary and they don't give any of the details of this sort of stuff. Just more what are they doing?
It's more than we used to get. To be fair.
Yeah, well, things are improving, but they could still go a lot further. All we know at the moment is that they're awaiting quotes on these jobs, so we'll wait and see what happens when the contractors start there and whether they do actually achieve an improvement in the stormwater there. And they're also doing an upgrade of the kitchen and the laundry as well at the campground. So
okay, so that's happening.
That work's being done.
Yeah. Freedom Camping bylaw hearing is 12th of September. John, did you put a submission in?
Yes.
You did? It's gone submission crazy.
Well, there's been a whole series of things that there's been consultation on. So, as I say, the current one is on the coastal plan, and we have got till November to get that one in. So if we don't have time in the next 8 minutes, we could talk about it another week.
We won't, because there's more things on the list.
Closed circuit television's another thing on the agenda.
Now, hold on, Freedom Camping. What did you submit about?
Apparently 48% of the things which I'm not sure whether they're complaints or whether they're asking details or what it is, but 48% of the things that council hears about Freedom Camping come from Raglan. And given that Raglan isn't 48% of the district, then it's quite a high proportion.
Who goes Freedom Camping at our friends' towns over the Divi? I don't want to name anyone, but you're all thinking of them.
Well, there's also Port Waikato.
There's
a whole coastline, in fact, and people stop on the way up and down State Highway 1 as well. So,
yeah, but it still doesn't surprise me. Uh-huh. So,
despite that figure, it's still the only area where they're actually marginally increasing the amount of Freedom Camping space, because they're adding that extra bit outside the church hall on Stewart Street.
Yeah, so you can camp overnight and then move on, somewhere near the toilet, and rather than just banning it everywhere, which you can't do anyway, they're trying to do something constructive, the community board has suggested. Okay. The CCTV, John, anything to say? You've got this on your list, but what do we know?
Well, all we know is that there's going to be details at the next meeting. So
They did get some funding. The region, was it the region got some funding from government from their Three Waters Bribe?
The Better Off Fund, yeah.
Yeah, the Better Off Fund. And so there was going to be... We feel like this started here in Raglan because the CCTV cameras were inadequate and they wanted more around town. But it's been done on a regional scale, and my worry was that louder voices would take the lion's share of it. We wouldn't get anything useful here.
We'll find out in 6 weeks' time.
Okay. What? Well, not this meeting? That's what details for the next meeting means. Okay. Connectivity strategy. This is one of these meaningless phrases that people don't know what that means. John, can you explain?
That means walkways and bridleways and footpaths and places where you can go walking, cycling and riding horses.
Yep. Anything to report?
There's only this cryptic line in the agenda which says discussion with various residents in Raglan West reconnectivity strategy. So I don't know whether they were talking about a particular one or whether they were for it or against it. Or
is it that there is potential for a pathway along the waterfront in front of the houses on, is it Nihi Nihi?
You mean where there's a keep off sign?
I haven't seen that, but that wouldn't surprise me.
It's Queen's Chain and there's a keep-off sign there.
So that's from the bridge beside the airfield, yeah. Those houses along that waterway there. I have a vague feeling of hearing something about that, so it might be about that, but that's a bit of a guess.
Okay, because it does seem rather odd that council's just spent, as I was saying earlier, $1 million or so on a new cycleway which hasn't followed that route, and has followed a different route which wasn't in the previous strategy and isn't in this one. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There may be something there. But again, it's something we don't know too much about, which is my complaint about lots of these things. We keep saying we don't know, and it seems to me that there should be more information there.
Mm. All right.
Raglan Natural is another one that we haven't got a report because it's going to be a verbal report.
But that's just a courtesy, though, because Raglan Natural is disconnected from council.
Uh-huh.
So as in council doesn't run or own.
Well, they've got the community board rep on it. I think that's why the community board keeps hearing about it.
Yeah. Yep.
The playground at Greenslade Road, again, nothing to report, really. They're talking to the local residents and the local landowner, and they've been doing that for a while. And the discretionary fund has just been topped up, so they've got an extra $14,000 for the year in that, making $22,000 altogether. And the Surf Life Saving Club, I think you talked to Dennis about it and his wife, about the 50-year book about the Surf Life Saving Club.
Yes, if you've got any photos or old or stories from those 50 years, I think they'd quite like to hear from you.
$2,000 to help with printing of the book as well. So.
Well, given that there's $22,000 in the kitty at the moment, I imagine they'll get it. Dennis Amor, of course, he'll probably have to sit out that debate because he's connected with the Surf Life Saving Club. But I just want to mention too, if you're part of a community group that needs funding for something, the discretionary fund is there for you. They've still got a bit of a surplus through the years over COVID. They kind of built up a bit of a surplus because people just weren't doing as much. So they have plenty of money at the moment. Not if you want to do a building or something, not that kind of money. But if you've got a project or an event, they would be more than happy to hear from you. And is it Ross Wallace is the community board representative who looks after that?
I think you're right.
Yeah, so get hold of Ross. Oh, yeah, I recommend that. This radio station occasionally goes there for a little bit of help with things because we're a charitable organisation. You don't have to be registered as a charitable organisation, but it can't be for an individual personal project is all.
Yeah, you can't repaint your house.
Yeah, for instance. Yeah.
Should we move on to sewage? Sewage is something which we keep talking about because it has a habit of leaking into the harbour. Hasn't done much in the way of that recently, but they're talking about, there has been talk about rebuilding the sewage works for a long time, and they seem to be moving towards backtracking on that one, because there was hope that it was going to be a land-based disposal, and now they're talking about upgrading the sewage works so that it's a cleaner output from it, because apparently it's still not meeting the resource consent standards on suspended solids and fecal coliforms.
They have to do that anyway. But see, we talk about land-based treatment, but it's the sewage. It's not like they take raw sewage and put it on the ground or in the ground. Like it has to be really well treated before it even gets to the site. and as far as we're aware, there's a possibility of a site up. Which road? Mangatawhiri Road.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
so
it still has lots of nutrients in it, even though it's not particularly harmful if you were to drink it or swim in it or whatever.
Rather you than me, John. Yeah. But so what am I saying?
I said not particularly harmful. I didn't say it wasn't harmful.
So there still has to be treatment. The treatment plant's still required, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Well, they're proposing now to, well, they seem to be moving towards a proposal of saying, well, if we can't get agreement with the landowner, and they're talking about that discussion dragging on, then maybe we just get a resource consent for a relatively short time. Because they're also getting pressure from the regional council saying, hey, you've been talking about this for years, nothing's happening.
Yeah, and they were supposed to renew the resource consent a few years ago. So, yeah.
2019, I think it was, yeah.
4 years ago. Yeah, so and they keep getting extensions, but after a while you can understand the regional council's going to be like, no, do it properly.
And another problem that they envisage is that some Mangatawhiri Road residents have expressed unsupportive feedback. These concerns should be considered regarding whether to pursue a private or public land partial land discharge solution.
So there's a former community board chairperson who lives up Mangatawhiri Road who's very good at mobilising people. We've seen him do it before, so if he wanted to stop this, I imagine he'd be quite effective, John.
Yeah. Well, one of the things they're trying to avoid is having a long, drawn-out environment court hearing, because that's expensive and time-consuming. So I think probably if Peter's suggesting that's what's going to happen, then that might well be putting them off.
Yeah. All right. We've reached 10 o'clock. Is there anything else you want to throw in the mix real quick?
I think we can come back to the coastal one because we've got till 14th of November to cover that one.
Yeah, so the coastal reserves plan, which the Waikato Regional Council is renewing after 30 years, and then you might remember some upset on Facebook locally. Someone was specifically saying that the council was trying to take some Māori land in some way, which I wasn't entirely accurate, but they were trying to certainly bring in some regulations. It's to do with that. That's to do with the coastal plan, I should say, the other way around.
Yep.
But there's lots more to it, isn't there, John?
Yes. Well, I think maybe we need to maybe have a whole interview to talk about it.
Yeah, I thought we were going to do that today because I didn't know the community board was happening. So.
Okay. So maybe in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, we'll try and get into it then.
Because one of the other things I've spotted is that the regional council had a climate action meeting at the end of August, and it seems to me that action's not quite what they're doing, because basically they're asking people to, or advocacy is what they call it, advocating improvements in the way things are done to reduce our carbon emissions. But since we've got the carbon emissions, which I hadn't realised were so much higher than the rest of the country, apparently 35% more from Waikato than the average for the rest of the country per capita, per person. Two-thirds of that coming from agriculture. I also hadn't realised that the dairy industry only makes up about 5% of the GDP in Waikato. I'd expect it to be much higher than that. So it seems to me we're getting an awful lot of pollution in our air and our rivers from something that's relatively minor in the way of contribution to the economy of the Waikato.
Well, does the GDP includes every shop and business and the hospital and schools and infrastructure and everything that's happening? So
yes,
yeah. Have you looked at it as
in prisons and everything else? So,
yeah. So if you looked at it as a percentage of an export, I think it would be pretty substantial. In any case, I have real problems with the way they try to calculate this per area, because it's an area that produces a lot of milk, and the milk is drunk by the rest of the country. So it would be really bizarre to say this little area here has to really get its contribution to climate change down. It has to work harder when the product is being used by people in the rest of the country. And the same applies for New Zealand has to get its do its bit for climate change because it produces so much stuff because of agriculture, but it's for food that's been consumed by other people. And the easiest way to do that is to stop producing that food, and then those people will starve. Like, it's, you know, it's a global issue. We shouldn't be looking at it in terms of regions or nations. Sometimes you have to, I get it, but I don't think it's helpful.
We all as individuals contribute to it, so you could look at it at an individual level, or you could look at it at a global level. Whichever way you look at it, we've still got way too much carbon going into the atmosphere, and we end up with the fires and the extreme temperatures and the cyclones that we had here earlier in the year.
Mm. Mm. All right, John, are you on the air tonight?
Yes, as usual, I've not worked out what I'm doing, but I'll get there.
But John will give more detail about some of the stuff we've been talking about, cover some things that we didn't get as far into. All right, thanks for coming in.